comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. And by the way, it's the show where you matter. Now, I gotta remind you, if you haven't done it yet, or those of you who are joining us for the first time, you don't know about it, and that is our K-Files. That's our weekly newsletter. It's free, really free. You don't have to join as a member. You don't. All you got to do is subscribe to it, and it takes a few seconds. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, although most people don't. They stay with us forever. And each edition of the K-Files contains some video links to interesting videos. It contains stories, interesting stories that have some relationship to the genre of the show. Also, the inside scoop on the show, and always a free download. Audience feedback. It's got a lot of good stuff in it, and it's absolutely free. So if you are not subscribed, be sure you do, because there's really no reason why you should be in the dark. And if you have the K-Files e-zine, you will no longer be in the dark. And it's free. Also, our members area. You know, the members area, some people ask me from time to time, send email and want to know, you know, don't you have archives? Yes, we do. They are called K-Pods. They are in the members area. And we would love for you to have access to all of them. I think, I'm not sure, but I think they go back, I know they go all the way through 2009, back into 2008. I think we've got some 2007 in there. But somewhere right along there is where the host that we were using at the time wiped out all our files. And they said, oops, sorry, but it wiped all of them out. And so we don't have any that go back beyond 2007, although the show does. And next month, May, will be the 10-year anniversary of this show. We started, actually, the truth is, I started in 1999 working toward the show. But the first actual broadcast was in the year 2000. The first time we put one out on the internet where anybody could hear it was 2000. And but anyway, using that as the birth date, then next month is our 10-year anniversary. And some of you have been listening to the Kevin Smith Show for 10 years. You've been with us since we started back in Kosovo. And back in Kosovo, we started, as you may remember, without even a microphone. Didn't even have an actual microphone. What I did is I plugged into the earphone jack on a little pocket-sized recorder and plugged the other end into the mic jack on the computer, and that's how we started the broadcast. Been a long time, and we've come a long way. Some of you have come all the way with us. Tonight, we're going to kick some more ass. Part 2. Last night we talked about something that I think probably a lot of people have suspected, but not very many people really knew the score. Part one of a mini-series I'm doing here at the Kevin Smith Show called Kick Some More Ass. Now, as I explained last night, that is not kick some more ass. It is kick some morass. And the word morass means confusion. As I said last night, there is a fair amount, in fact, a lot of confusion in among the ranks of the world of the paranormal. I got an email today where someone said, I just don't know what to believe anymore. And of course, those of you who listen all the time know that I say, why believe anything? That doesn't mean you disbelieve everything. In fact, it doesn't even mean you disbelieve anything at all. When you say, I don't believe anything, you can mean, and what I mean is, either I know something or I don't know. And if I don't know, then I just say, well, I don't know. And we have to do some more investigating to find out. It's not incumbent upon me to believe. That's an act of faith. And when we're talking about things that most of the world classifies as paranormal, when we are talking about things that most of the world thinks is fringe, I think it's not incumbent upon me to have an act of faith and dive off into the deep end on anything. I think it's incumbent upon me to say, let's investigate till we know. And then when we know, we know. In keeping with all of that, I have asked Robert Morningstar to be here with us for part two of Kick Some More Ass. And it's always a pleasure to have him with us. Robert, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's good to be here.
Robert, there's a lot of confusion. And I think it's been instilled, most of that confusion has been instilled purposely into the field of the paranormal. And although I don't consider UFOs and extraterrestrials to be paranormal in the classical sense, in the broad sense it is, because, you know, the definition of paranormal is anything for which there is no scientific explanation.
Right.
And when it comes to UFOs and extraterrestrials, there is no scientific explanation because the scientific community has steadfastly refused to take it seriously and investigate it.
Yes.
So that leaves it in that very broad definition of paranormal. And in that body of information that we have about UFOs and extraterrestrials, there's a great deal of confusion. Over the weekend, Stephen Hawking added to the confusion at the same time he took away some of the confusion.
Okay.
And I'd like for us to talk about that this evening.
Yeah. Well, I was very surprised to hear of Hawking's recent comments, as I was still reeling from last December when he last made a comment on UFOs and extraterrestrials. It was very derisive, and I thought, my God, this is an incredible turnaround. What's happened to this fellow? Either he's been let loose, or something's been revealed to him, or they're using him as a prop. Basically, I see it as damage control. Something has happened. As we told on your show 2 years ago, I spoke about Clay and Sean Pickering and the UN UFO initiative and the things that were coming down, the ultimatum that had been received from all the extraterrestrials to reveal their presence or they would do so. All of that's been coming true and very rapidly. And Hawking's statement is another domino in the collapse of this long string of dominoes that's ultimately going to lead to disclosure or revelation, whichever term you want to use. Hawking is a paradox to me, especially with this comment, and couching it in words of a warning. That's really serious to me, that he chose to make a statement which has a negative implication being that it would be a threat and that they are dangerous. And basically, I think it's bad advice. You know, the classic picture of the ostrich sticking its head in the sand, which is not true, but it's a stereotype about people who'd rather ignore and hide from reality than face up to it.
Well, you know, when you stick your head in the sand, that leaves your rear in the air, and it's easily kicked.
So they're looking for kicking more ass. But, you know, the other word about morass is that it means very soggy ground that will bogs. That will bog you down and make it difficult. It will actually overwhelm you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see. The other meaning of the term that you've chosen for this show is that we're struggling out of a morass of disinformation and falsehoods and memes that have been planted in the community to basically disable research and to deflect investigations that will lead to the truth. But I think it's very significant, and it just shows the desperation of establishment science to kind of cover its rear as this mystery and phenomenon is unfolding.
Well, the subtitle for tonight's show, for tonight's show is Old Paradigm in Death Spasms.
Exactly.
And I think that's what it is.
Its own lies.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what's happening. The resources, I've spoken a little bit about this before, that disinformation costs the disinformant a tremendous amount of money, resources, time, because every time they put up a lie, they have to support it, and propagate it, perpetuate it, and the longer that lie goes on, another lie must be generated to prop that one up, and those resources eventually, deception collapses from its own, it decays, basically. But, you know, when you were talking about science earlier in your introduction, two words came into my mind. One is superficial science, and the other one is occult science, to describe what we're dealing with. The exclusion of investigation into hyperdimensional physics or the paranormal, let's say, like that, that's a good word, generic and, you know, all-encompassing. The denial, it's really denial of entry into that investigation by putting obstructions in the way of pursuing, while at the same time there's another school of science, which is occult science, black projects, that are allowed to investigate and are the only ones validated by the powers that be to have a view of those and of those realms. But that is all falling apart very rapidly. And the presence of extraterrestrials and alien beings all around our planet is so massively reported, especially with a greater frequency in the last year and a half than ever before. So I think it's damage control and desperation on the part of establishment science right now.
You know, for those who are not familiar with what Hawking said, apparently what he said was, and I'm this is my paraphrase of it, but what he said was that we should not attempt to contact extraterrestrials. We ought to stay as quiet as we can and hope they don't find us, because our contact with them may be something akin to the contact of Christopher Columbus with the Native Americans. And he said it didn't go well for the Native Americans. It all depends on how you look at it. Now, I'm part Native American, so I'm not insensitive to what has happened. But in some ways, it's gone very well for Native Americans. Was it fair? No. Was it right what was done to Native Americans? No. But in some ways and in some cases, there have been great benefits to Native Americans. You know, it is true that Native American health care on the reservations is appalling when compared to your local hospital. On the other hand, it's way better than what we had when it was nothing but the shaman.
Yeah. I think that what you're talking about and addressing is the survival of cultures depends on adaptation.
That's right.
And basically, that's the challenge. Are we going to be able to adapt to a new paradigm, as we were discussing? And that has to do with psychological fitness far more than anything else, in my estimation, to be psychologically prepared for any contingency, you know, whether it be a catastrophe, as I've lived through 9/11 in New York City, or any survivor of any disaster anywhere, is adaptation, adaptability. Can we survive psychologically? And I'll tell you, that was the most difficult thing of all in the last 10 years of post 9/11. So I think this is also part of psychological preparedness. There is a body in the Central Intelligence Agency that deals with this. It's called the Psychological Strategy Board. And this has been the body within the psychological department of the Central Intelligence Agency that has handled this issue way back from the Robertson panel, 1952, how to deal with it and how to direct public consciousness, because that's what they've done. They've molded public awareness and public consciousness to their desires using the strategies of ridicule, discreditation, hoaxing. You know, they mm-hmm. actually would put up, could do hoaxes to discredit the whole field. And they set up situations. Well, Paul Benowitz is the saddest example of that, and how he was manipulated, mind controlled, with information and disinformation simultaneously. And that's also what you were talking about. They give you two messages at the same time. They cannot both be true, but they implant in your psyche both possibilities. It's a very strange psychology, but it leads to something called cognitive dissonance, where your reason is challenged, and your reason is a faculty that's actually, I believe it's nonverbal, and when they present visual information that's falsified, your subconscious recognizes it, as I did the falsification of the Zapruder film when I first realized that. So Hawking's statement is the last, you know, it's in a series, gradations not disclosure, but revelation, gradations of revelation. Sagan coming with cosmos first, and then riding the dragons of Eden, and then falling out of disfavor with NASA, you know, how his career ended. There are a lot of disinformation experts in the history of ufology, starting with Dr. Donald Menzel, who was the foremost astronomer of his time and on the Robertson panel. And what many people don't know is that Dr. Menzel and other scientists on the Robertson panel who were working for industry and were depicted as independent scientists were all on the payroll of the Central Intelligence Agency, and that letters were written to the agency asking them to exclude from public from publication the fact that they were associated and working for the CIA. I found those documents in Blue Book and in CIA archives.
Well, you know, since you brought that up, the Robertson panel, it's interesting how we even know about it.
Mm-hmm.
The way we know about the Robertson panel, the first time we ever heard about it, was in the book written by Edward J. Ruppelt, who had been the chief of Project Blue Book.
Well, I believe that the major, Marine major, who wrote for Truth magazine, was the first one to reveal it.
The best of my knowledge, it was revealed in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
And it was revealed in Ruppelt's book and quoted in Truth magazine.
And Major Donald Kehoe had the information. You know, Donald Menzel put a mental block on my mind when I couldn't think of Donald Kehoe.
Yeah, Kehoe tried to get Ruppelt to go to work for him.
Uh-huh.
And
you know,
Ruppelt wouldn't do it.
UFO Digest and type in UFO smokescreen, you'll see Major Kehoe debating with Mike Wallace and exposing the Robertson panel, and Wallace trying to debunk it, but then admitting that he has the paper from the Air Force. It's a very interesting thing, just an aside, because it deals with what is in the Robertson panel. From the stuff that they excised, you can infer what they are talking about, and I think your readers or your listeners will appreciate UFO smokescreen on UFO Digest. But again, and the other one is Dr. Luis Alvarez, the photo expert in the JFK assassination, was also the photo expert hired by the Robertson panel, and specifically it was he who wrote the letter to Central Intelligence asking that his name and Dr. Menzel and other scientists be separated from their work with the CIA. He was specifically the gentleman who wrote the letter. And he's the one who discovered, by the way, his greatest claim to fame, discovering the iridium layer around the Earth that proved the Chicxulub asteroid impact actually occurred.
We have to step away for a break, and we will return in just a moment, more with the old paradigm and its death spasms. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Robert Morningstar, and we're talking about the old paradigm and its death spasms. Robert, let's get back a little bit to this Stephen Hawking thing.
Okay.
Now, his statement before had been quite different. What he has said up until this weekend basically has been there's no such thing as extraterrestrials.
Right, he's kind of been acommittal, noncommittal. But I came across a very interesting statement he made in 1998, which is quite telling. He said, there may indeed be UFOs flying around with aliens in them, and the governments could be lying to us, but that is not a question that I want to answer. That's a quote.
Mm-hmm.
So he felt he even then, you know, it was not a wise thing for an institution physicist, establishment physicist, to embark upon making any comments on that subject. But Kevin, I want to really commend you. I was listening to the show from yesterday, and I really want to commend you on the detective work you've done. And I can affirm to the audience that the Central Bureau for Astronomical Telegrams certainly does exist, and it is an official body. And I have a little surprise for you. When you know, I get charged up by this kind of research and investigation, and I let my psychic mode go. You know, I just let it loose and try to find something, and I let my spirit start to do the investigation. I came up with something really, really interesting that I sent to you in an email just before we went on the show. And if you are able to get that email and click on that link, you'll be able to read, in their own words, their confession that they suppressed the discovery of minor planets in 1974 and kept it out of their own circulars. They discovered minor planets out near Jupiter. I think they call it Jupiter 13. And they said they suppressed it even within their own circulars until they could verify that it wasn't going to collide with the Earth. And it's very cryptic. Through private communications, they confirmed that the orbits were not going to cross with that of the Earth. So I've sent you that memo. That's the annual report of the Central Bureau of Astronomical Telegrams for 1974. And you can put that link up for your readers.
Thank you.
Okay, readers, listeners, what do you got? Watchers, you've got everything.
Well, yeah, we'll just say for our folks.
Yeah, for our folks.
I'll put that up.
I have another surprise for you.
Okay.
It deals with a real study of the Nibiru phenomenon in Planet X.
Okay.
And I've been given a PDF, PowerPoint presentation by my Native American friend, Blue Cloud. He sent it to me a couple of months ago, and it's the best thing I have ever seen, the most devoted research to Nibiru and Planet X that I have ever read. And it makes it perfectly intelligible and understandable from myth and legend and Zechariah Sitchin, etc. It's really a labor of love. So I'm going to send that to you so that you can provide that for your listeners, readers, observers,
okay,
et cetera, monitors. So I'm going to send that to you. He's asked me to disseminate the information and to give it to the world. It's a very generous, wonderful gift from Blue Cloud, and I commend him for that.
Well, I thank you for it, and we certainly will make that available. But now, in talking about the death of the old paradigm, and it's in its death spasms, the reason I say that I think it's in its death spasms is because we're seeing lurches forward and then lurches backward. So the reason I wanted to go back to Stephen Hawking is by him coming out and warning us not to try and contact extraterrestrials, there is a tacit admission that extraterrestrials are real.
And that they're trying to contact us. That's
yes.
The other inference. So if they contact you, don't listen. Don't mm-hmm. communicate. It's a very odd statement.
Well,
indeed.
Here's the deal. Let's say that what he says about the effects upon our culture and upon our society, let's say that that is for real, that that really would happen, that it would forever change us and change what it means to be us. Well, not only, I think that is true, I think it would, but not only would extraterrestrial contact do that, so did the steam locomotive.
Absolutely.
So did the airplane.
And going even farther back, so did steel or iron.
Yeah.
You know, each discovery or a scientific discovery, you can call the forging of iron a scientific discovery. Each one thrusts mankind forward and at the same time creates pitfalls and dangers to his own survival. Atomic energy is a perfect example.
Well, and you're right. And I think a good example, too, is the automobile, because with the proliferation of the automobile, there was a whole segment of our society that vanished, and that was the buggy manufacturers and the buggy whip makers. That whole part of our culture went away, and you know, if we ever come up with flying cars, then tire manufacturers are going to be out of business. And so it's a natural thing that exposure to new information obsoletes certain parts of the old information.
And I believe that's one of the major reasons why they have suppressed the information for so long. Townsend Brown had models of UFOs or flying saucers floating around in his laboratory. I've seen films of those floating around in his laboratory proving his EM, you know, electromagnetic propulsion system, you know, back in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So, but to maintain the economic machinery based on oil, based on obsolescence, based on automobiles providing 10% of the jobs in the United States, they didn't know how to disengage themselves from that economic paradigm. And that's actually what we're watching. We're watching the demise of an economic paradigm, a false one, and that's why it's collapsing.
Well, I don't have an opinion about whether it's false or not, but it is old, and I'm old, and I can tell you when you get old, things that you used to be able to do, you can't do quite as well anymore. I run, and I can outrun most people, but I can't run as fast as I used to.
Right.
I can fight, and I can outfight most people, but I can't fight as well as I could 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I just don't move as easily as I did 10 years ago.
You're smarter.
Yeah, and I am. Yeah, I'm a little smarter, I hope.
Your movement's there.
But, you know, it's just the natural course of events that as things get older, they don't work as well. They decay.
Right.
And that's true even of economic systems. That's true of governmental systems. And they have to be replaced with something that fits the times and that does work. And the problem is nobody likes change. Nobody.
In reality, that's true. You know, most everybody voted for change, and look what they got, no change. But people are afraid of change. It's a very threatening thing to have to adapt to change on a regular basis. If you remember the book Future Shock.
1970, Alvin Toffler.
Future Shock, right. That was the future shock. The need of the human mind and the entire neuromuscular system to react and adapt to change after change that was being presented at a greater and faster and more rapid rate. And every one of those adjustments to the change causes a biochemical alteration of the entire system. And he was wondering how much human beings could take. That was what Future Shock was.
I read a statement the other day, Robert, I think you would find interesting.
Okay.
It was a comment about Alvin Toffler's book, Future Shock.
Really?
And it was, in the comment, it was talking about how right he was. And, of course, he said that change would continue to accelerate. The rate of change would continue to accelerate. And in this article that I read, it said how right he was. Change is now happening so fast, the future is the past.
That's a pretty good statement.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty, you know, and I think that this is the reason that we see this syndrome called burnout. Some people can adapt more easily than others, but people who are rigid in their adaptation have a tougher time dealing with it. And I think that's the reason for a lot of both physical and psychological burnout that I see in our society.
Well, as the old paradigm continues to go through its death spasms, what are some things that you think we will see happen? I mean, what are some signs of those death spasms?
Oh, I think some of them will be independent people coming forth with inventions that are timely and efficient and economical, and others will be novel psychologies to deal with the need to adapt to a new awareness of our interdependence. And well, how much else? Well, besides, I don't want to get into the obvious, that I think there is going to be a UFO revelation disclosure. It's going to be disclosure as the government comes out with it, and it's going to be a UFO revelation if they come out with it. That's the distinction I make between those two words. Now, here's where we get to this this statement of Hawking's and how it bears on this scenario. Is it going to be disclosure? Is it going to be revelation? Now, if we look at the religious aspects of it, there is an anticipation in the jargon, in the lingo of fundamentalism, both on the Muslim side and on the Christian side, of this battle between Christ and Antichrist. And some of my more religious friends believe that a statement like Hawking's is intended to cast fear into the public so that should the second coming of Christ occur, it will be depicted by the powers that be as an invasion of aliens who want to destroy the world. So that's a very common theme amongst 2012-ist people who.
Yeah, but you know, let's take that idea for a moment. Now, let's say.
Sure.
Let's say that these religious folks are correct. Well, a break just took over. We'll pick up there when we come back.
Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this, so don't go away. We're talking with Robert Morningstar, and we're talking about, well, this is part two of a mini-series called Kick Some Morass, and we're talking about the old paradigm in death spasms. One quick announcement before we get back into that discussion. I just happened to notice the survival meter is still up on the website. Please disregard it. We have met the budget. For this month, we need don't disregard supporting the show because we got to start on paying the bills for next month. But we've met the budget, and so we're not in danger of demise here in two or three days. And I want to thank everyone, and I mean sincerely from the bottom of my heart, thank you, everyone who sent a donation of any amount. Thank you so much. All right, we were talking about, I said, suppose these religious folks are true, or let's say they're accurate.
Yeah.
And there's going to be this second coming, or this return of Christ. Now, the Muslims, this will come as a shock to many Christians, the Muslims believe that will happen as well.
Exactly.
They have different beliefs about who he is and what his role is and all of that. But as far as a second coming of Christ and his battle against the Antichrist, they buy that too.
Right.
They teach the same.
I can tell you what the Muslim belief is, that Jesus Christ is coming back with the Mahdi.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what we're dealing with right now is the theology of the Shiite Muslims, which is Iran, in that they are trying to force world events toward a culmination, which will force his return. That's actually what they're trying to do, and several other groups are trying to do as well.
Yeah.
The religious groups.
So, but let's say that this second coming happens.
Right.
All right. This figure. Let's assume that it's all real. This figure, this Christ, really, I don't think could care less what the governments think about him, and I don't think there's much they can do about him or his coming. I think, you know, if they want to say, well, that, you know, he's... this is an invasion of extraterrestrials and this is evil, they can do that, and they're going to get their rears kicked.
It can be expected, yes, that that would be their reaction.
Yeah, they will get their rears kicked, because even if, let's say, that there is an extraterrestrial, how can I say it? Not an invasion. Let's say they show up.
Right.
All right. That's they've got no particular hostile intentions. And then our government or some other government or all the governments decide this is an invasion and they attack. All right, who are they kidding?
Right.
These people have traveled millions of light years to get here, or at least thousands of light years. We can't even travel one light year.
And they can disappear in the blink of an eye.
And we're going to fight them? Who are these people? Yeah. What kind of left-handed Kool-Aid are these people drinking?
I wonder myself. You know, the other thing about this act of desperation that I talk about, I think that science is mortified at the idea that when this disclosure, if this disclosure happened, if this revelation happened, it would prove that religion was right. And it would prove that one can arrive at the right conclusion through different paths of investigation or different ways of thinking. And it would topple its claim to being the only way to know truth. Truth can manifest itself through many different avenues of human perception, thinking, mentation, imagination. And many people walking the earth today have experienced the cosmic Christ.
Well, there's also this. You know, the universe does what it wants to do. The universe did not go to Harvard. It didn't go to Yale. It didn't graduate from MIT. And the universe does stuff all the time that doesn't fit what the scientists have supposed. And it does things that are way different and outside of the alleged laws of physics. And, you know, I read about it all the time. There are articles that come out in New Scientist. There are articles that come out in Space Daily. In all these science sites, there are articles that come out where they say, well, the scientists are scratching their head on this one. They've discovered this. They've discovered that. And the latest one is they discovered a solar system where the planets are orbiting backward from the way they assume all planets must.
Right.
Okay.
I heard something about that.
Now, this doesn't mean that they're spinning backward on their axis.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different issue. They are in orbit in the wrong direction. And according to their laws of physics, that couldn't work.
That couldn't happen. Right.
Okay.
You know, this is a timely moment for me to comment on, again, I mentioned that I wanted to comment on the disinformationists and the misdirections that we've had to suffer over the last 60 years as far as the subject is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them deal with SETI and the Drake equation. And I like to talk about the Drake equation as the fake equation that became the real equation.
All right.
Because when it came out, it really was kind of disheartening, the statistics and the probabilities that were being inferred, because it's not a real mathematical formula. It's a symbol structure. But when you looked at that, you got from regions that develop solar systems, the right kind of stars. When you got to N sub E, which was the number of solar systems that would produce Earth-like worlds, and the paradigm at that time was that, oh, you know, the solar system is unique, there are no other planets, it's far-fetched to believe that there would be any other planets around other suns. As long as you got to the zero in that formula, the equation would result in zip, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But how it backfired was with the new technologies that emerged in the 1990s to study the oscillation of stars and occultation, and radio telescopes that are now picking up these solar systems spinning backwards, as you have just pointed out. And so now, when you get to N sub E, you have to stick in a number between 350 or 400 into that factor, and then continue down the line. And then there's the other assumptions that carbon-based life is the only life that there can be. And there is a hint, really, recently, in studying Titan, where they are starting to hypothesize the possibility that Titan could bear methane-based life.
Yes.
Which brings us full circle back to 1947 and 52 and the Robertson Commission, which deals with a report that I read amongst the MJ-12 papers, that at that time they hired Donald Menzel. As I said, he was the world's foremost astronomer.
Mm-hmm.
They hired Donald Menzel and all the world's foremost astronomers to track UFO fleets as they were coming to Earth and departing, to try to figure out where they were coming from. And I read a report that they had observed UFO fleets leaving Earth and going to Titan. And now we find that Titan, in its topography, is the most Earth-like-looking planet, even though it's a moon, is the most Earth-like-looking celestial body that we've encountered in our own solar system. And, you know, then there's a lot of other things that deal with the possibility that the Greys may very well, and that's my hypothesis, that the Greys may very well originate in Titan because of their cold. You know, they're said to be cold, they're said to be smelly, and I think that something that came from a methane planet would be pretty stinky.
me. Well... a break is taking over, and we'll pick up there when we come back. All right, folks, don't go away. Welcome back, and for those of you just now joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you, and we're talking with Robert Morningstar. Now, Robert Morningstar has joined us in this discussion of the old paradigm and its death spasms, and we're just talking about various examples of the death spasms and what we can expect to see for the future. Now, when we went away for a break, Robert, you had just been talking about Titan, and that scientists are now beginning to seriously think that maybe there is a possibility that there could be some life form on Titan that is based on methane rather than oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, right, etc. And, right, you know, I saw that article.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and I'm glad they're finally catching up with me.
I agree.
Because I've been saying now for several years, if life happens, it's going to happen within the context where it finds itself. The reason you and I use oxygen and nitrogen is because our lives happened out here on the surface of Earth where there's oxygen and nitrogen.
Right.
All right. Now, if life happens, of course, we now know there are life forms on this planet that don't even use oxygen.
Right.
And they're not little microscopic life forms either.
Right.
Yeah.
Temperature was another limiting factor. Recall that the temperature range of life in the 1950s was a very limited range, and so that also fixed our concepts of the limits of life developing on other planets until they discovered those smokers, those volcanic tubes, lava tubes coming out of the ocean, and all of the different kinds of life forms that evolved down there in temperatures of 500 degrees or so.
Well, and not only temperature, but pressure.
And pressure, right.
Yeah.
So we and have a demonstration in those smokers of the potential for life to develop on other planets with under tremendous pressures and under different heat regimens than we assumed for so long. So this thing, the insight on methane-based life, is also really a very intriguing.
I think there's a possibility for life on every planet.
I agree.
Every planet.
Who knows?
And Lord Rees, he's the president of the Royal Society, Great Britain's Royal Society.
Mm-hmm.
He said within the last week, he said in a speech to the Royal Society that extraterrestrial life could be all around us and we wouldn't even recognize it. And he said, I loved it because he said, you know, the problem with all of the experiments to go out into space and look for life is that we're essentially going out there looking for us.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for life that looks like us. And when I read that, it's almost a direct quote from something I have been saying on this show for years. And, you know, you're not going to find us on any planet that doesn't have these kind of conditions on the surface.
Right.
So you have to look for a life that has adapted or that has grown up and evolved in those conditions.
Well, there are marvelous photos emerging of Mars in recent months of really, I cannot say it anything other than that it looks like red trees, shrubbery, vegetation. Fantastic photographs released by the European Space Agency. And I recommend the work of Joseph Skipper and his website.
Oh, fantastic website.
Some of the most amazing photographs. The man must spend 24/7, you know, navigating through the archives. And he does find some spectacularly beautiful photos that show what to me, I would call them forests.
Yeah,
forest.
And in fact, you know, I used one of his photographs from his website in my book, you know,
right.
Of the pine forest.
That was a fun book to edit. I have to commend you. I hope your readers are pursuing it.
Well, we've had a number of people buy the book, and, you know, it's... it is written, as you know, in a real fast, hard-hitting, fact style. It was designed specifically for, according to internet psychology, meaning we want it now. So I don't use a whole lot of flowery words, and I don't puff a subject. We just go, boom, here it is, boom, here's another one, boom, here's another one.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, we're only stating the obviouses, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think that's what, you know, your work. You know, people have a hard time seeing through the filters that have been imposed upon their consciousness by what they call education. And we are fortunate, you, Kevin and I, to have grown up in the 1950s and 60s before those filters were put upon American consciousness.
Well, but see, that's one of the things that is a spasm of the old paradigm as it dies. The filters are beginning to break down, and people are beginning to be able to see reality.
Exactly.
And you know, whenever I speak at a conference, one of the things that I always ask the crowd, you know, I always say, how many of you have ever seen a cow? And they raise their hands. How many of you have ever seen a Cadillac? And they raise their hands. And when was the last time you saw a cow and allowed somebody to convince you it was a Cadillac? And they all laugh. And then I say, and yet you do that with UFOs all the time. When you see one, you saw it. And then you let somebody convince you it was a wedding candle or a flare or it was swamp gas.
That's tantamount to the same thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting. And the willingness of people, willingness to suspend belief, not to suspend disbelief, like when you go to a film or a play to let it happen. People are willing to suspend belief of their own perceptions rather than adapt to a new paradigm, a new view of reality.
Well, the professional debunkers would have you believe that your eyes are wrong 100% of the time when you're talking about UFOs.
Right.
You think you saw this, but you really didn't. You saw something else. And they would have you believe your eyes are wrong 100% of the time. And then they pull this. I like this. They say, well, I'm sure you're very sincere and you saw something. But, you know, you're not an astrophysicist. You're not an aeronautical engineer. You're not. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's true. But look, I'm not an architect. And yet I'm never, ever confused when I see a building. I know it's a building.
Right. You saw a house.
Yeah. You don't have to be a credentialed expert to know what your eyes saw.
One of the most irate UFO whistleblowers that I have ever met, if not the most irate, is Mr. James Callahan, formerly number three man in the FAA, who had to deal with the Tokyo Japan Airlines encounter
yeah.
with an aircraft carrier-sized UFO over Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so indignant at the way the Central Intelligence Agency came in and browbeat them all, took all of their evidence and told them, this never happened, this meeting was never here, and you guys are under a national security oath, end of story. So when he blew the whistle in Washington at the famous National Press Club conference sponsored by James Fox and Leslie Keene, this man was fuming, and he repeated his mantra, which is, who are you going to believe, the government or your lying eyes? I'm sure. Have you had him on your program?
Yes, I have, and it was a delight.
He's a great man.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You know, you, Kevin, and I, we see clearly. We say what we see. We state the obvious, and that's always the best policy. And one thing I always like to say to people who engage in an investigation: the truth is seamless. It's like a fabric. And if you get one thread and start pulling on that thread, it'll lead you to another, and the crosshatch and the warp and the woof of the fabric will be revealed to you. But finding that one true thread first amidst all the disinformation and the distractions, because that's another big thing,
mm-hmm.
Plays into non-disclosure, is keeping the public distracted with irrelevant information.
Well, and see, a great, great problem that exists for any realm of truth or reality right now. People want to believe in somebody, and to the point that it's quite obvious they don't believe in themselves. They don't have a lot of confidence in themselves. And that's a shame, because, you know, your eyes see what your eyes see.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need a bunch of other people to tell you, yeah, you really did see a UFO. You know, I don't care if anybody believes me or if they don't believe me. I know what I see.
You know, in just so many words, that's exactly what I said on a UFO questionnaire. I had this... employee of NASA is going for a PhD, and UFOs are the topic. And I was helping her, Diana Hoyt, to get information. You know, I asked people who read UFO Digest and the other lists to answer this questionnaire. Tell this lady the truth. You know, she's the first NASA person that I've ever seen who is curious and is going to go for a PhD in ufology. oh, let's support that. Let's see what comes of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tell her what we really believe and what we really know. And that's the answer that I gave. I don't need to have anybody validate my perceptions to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I meant by not so many words in one couple of sentences. Exactly what you said. I have my senses, I have my mind, and I can see, I can hear, and it's up to me to interpret the reality of my perceptions. And I'm not going to, I don't need anybody to validate for me what I saw or didn't see, which is why I would never tell the government or any official that I saw a UFO, because it's a futile effort.
You know, what are they going to do about it? Send the dog catcher?
Pardon?
What are they going to do about it? If you report a UFO, who are they going to send? The dog catcher?
But I'm just saying they have their little their routine, you know, which is like, I can't believe in this, and when I'm, you know, so they give you the runaround. So
yeah.
Why waste your time with officialdom? Officialdom. OFFICIALDUMB. Officialdom.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where it is. Let's open up the phone lines, and I would like to invite our audience to join us in discussing these death throes of the old paradigm, these death spasms of the old paradigm. One of the great death spasms is, at least for me, something that really sticks out, is these big lurches forward toward disclosure and then giant steps backward away from it. And, you know, that's a spasm. That's a movement and then a retraction.
It's also a dance.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what that indicates is that this information is very rapidly slipping out of the control of the old paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
The telephone number is 623-444-5889. You can call that from anywhere on planet Earth, probably also from planet Nibiru. The toll-free number in the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have an international toll-free number. The main number will work for you, 623-444-5889, and we'd be glad to have a call from you from anywhere in the world. But if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada and you don't want to make that international call, you can use the flash message option on my website. And my website is kevinsmithshow.com. So the telephone lines are open, and if you wish to join us in this conversation about the death spasms of the old paradigm, give us a call. We'll be glad to talk with you. Now, we do have a flash message from Stuart in Japan, and he says, I knew the 10-year anniversary of KSS must have been coming up soon. However, I didn't realize it would be as early as the middle of next month. Are you planning anything special for the event? Yeah, I think I'm going to launch a Chinese wedding candle into the air and create a UFO buzz around Phoenix. He says, you know, some sort of 10th year anniversary special of KSS, which takes us through the history and some of the highlights of KSS along the way would be nice. You know, I may do that. I did in 2003 a DVD called Kevin Smith Show, The Inside Story. And it kind of took us through some of that history. So maybe I will.
Celebration would be very fitting.
Yeah, maybe we will.
We're in our 10th year as well at UFO Digest.
So you guys started in 2000 as well?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, happy anniversary.
Both of us.
All right. To the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
How you doing, Kevin? This is Sam.
Hi, Sam.
And I am calling from Lake Havasu City, Arizona.
Oh, well, I am very glad to have somebody from Lake Havasu City. Is this your first time to call us?
First time calling. I've sent you a couple emails today, Kevin, and you responded, and I appreciate your prompt response.
All right. Well, let me give you some applause.
Hey.
All right. What's on your mind, Sam?
Well, you know, the spasms that you're talking about, it's, I mean, it's evident, you know, and I went into a little bit what I've been doing and just doing my own research. I don't have the luxury of being able to go out and reach out and touch these whistleblowers, but I do have the internet, and believe me, I use it to its extent. You know, you have to draw parallels. You have to weed out the good and the bad, and leave yourself spinning sometimes in a cycle you just can't get out of.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe what you're saying about that spasm that you just mentioned, the step towards disclosure and then the step back, it's so evident, and they are losing control. And it's amazing to watch on both sides. My father, he was a designer on the B2 program.
Uh-huh.
And years ago, you know, I moved to Vegas to actually be closer to Area 51. I was drawn there, and I, you know, used to go out to Black Box Highway and take pictures, and actually met with Bob Lazar, had a pitcher of beer and pizza with him one time, and was just absolutely amazed at the stuff that he told me. He was the only person in this genre that I've actually got to speak to, and I was left on a never-ending search to find quote-unquote truth. And as it's getting closer and closer to it happening and being brought out, what I see more and more is more and more people are coming out and actually being quote-unquote in the know, and doing their research. But I'm taken back by how many individuals are still, for lack of a better term, just ignorant of wanting to even go there, to even search, because they're so happy in their blind little lives. And that's the part that probably disturbs me the most.
Well, I think it's good to be concerned about other people. And yet, on the other hand, I think you sort of have to adopt the police officer's view in order to survive it emotionally. And a police officer's view of something like this would be, let's say someone's standing at the edge on the top of a 40-story building, and they're standing right at the edge. Now, the cop gets as close as he can, and he doesn't want to be dragged over the edge either. But he holds out his hand, and he says, come on, step back. Everything's going to be okay. Don't jump. Everything's going to be all right. We'll work this out. Come on, step back. Now, if the guy jumps, oh, well.
Yeah.
That was his decision. Yeah.
And the other side of that coin is those people, the old adage, if there was a cat on the roof jumping, they'd be risking their lives to save the cat. But then most people are down there in their mind, if there's a person in the back of their mind going, jump.
Yeah, there is that phenomenon, you know? Commonly reported in New York.
Right, and that's
terrible.
It's just,
but
it's terrible, but it's reality. I mean, yeah. You know, and I do these studies because I mean I'm a firefighter. I fight wildland fire in the summer, and I'm going back to school again because I just need to keep my mind going all the time, and. But I'm finding, at least with this, I've got a never-ending sea of research I can do. And at night when I come home, I sit till, you know, whenever I'll listen to you, then I'll listen to Coast to Coast and see what he's got going on and search through archives and just try to put everything together. And last night on that show you did, I started digging through not the NSA. What was that other website you were talking about?
The IAU.
The IAU, and I was pulling up those documents, and I just went to their website, and I went to their search, and I started typing words that maybe they didn't think about in their search, like classified extraterrestrial or, you know, word combinations, and I was pulling up documents that they probably didn't want to be on there,
mm-hmm.
to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really dig and find, if you use, you know, just common sense, you can find these documents, and you know, and I try to tell people, my son, I live with my son, he's 20 years old, and he's in the know, and he's just as curious as I am, and I just kind of wean him into it a little bit. He doesn't do the research, but he listens to his pop, and I show him stuff, and it's amazing. But on the other side, my father, being the Northrop and Air Force guy, he is completely blind of it. I don't know if it's because he won't talk about it, because I've asked him in years past when he was first on the B-2 program, before it was even finished with their first plane, I went back after I talked to Bob Lazar, I went back to Anaheim Hills and sat down and talked to him playing Nintendo, and I tried to casually ask him about shared technology and casually ask him about underground highways that I heard that led from Edwards Air Force Base to Papoose Lake and Area 51. And he looked at me like I had a horn growing out of my head, and just all he said was, "I don't want to talk about that."
And well, there you go. Left. Yeah, and that's okay. The main thing though is that, you know, you've come to a point where you rely on your own mind, and you trust your eyes, you trust your mind. And, you know, we don't have to have the government pat us on the head and say, "Yes, that's right, you saw a UFO." I don't care whether they ever do that or not. I've seen Volkswagens, and I've seen Boeing 747s, and I've seen roller skates, and I've never had the government confirm those for me.
Yep.
You know,
and when they crash, go ahead.
If you want to surprise your father the next time you talk to him, ask him if he knows about the gravity well that the B-2 bomber makes in front of its wing, so it slips through the atmosphere riding the gravity wave.
Okay, we have to step away for a break. Sam, thank you for the call. Very interesting. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and let's go to Paul in Australia. We have a flash message from him. The telephone lines are open if you want to call and join in. Paul writes, "I don't think the aliens are friendly. I was abducted, and they weren't friendly. They just took sperm. I know that sounds funny, but it did happen. Last night's show was the best show ever. 10 by 10. The aliens don't care about us at all. What have they ever done for us? Build a few pyramids, that's about all. The aliens inspired the Bible, not the God guy people think did it. Just a thought." And he says, "Lots of laughs. Ryan," that's one of our callers, "sounds like Elvis to me. I love that guy's calls." Mm-hmm. Okay, to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Tony from North Carolina.
Hi, Tony.
Hello, Tony.
How you doing, Kevin and Mr. Morningstar?
Good.
You can call me Robert.
Okay. The statement you made about... most of us born in the 50s or growed up in the 50s, I believe that is true, that we have more of an open mind on this subject, because I know I've had at least three incidents where I've seen UFOs starting at 12 years old. So I know that there's got to be something to it.
Was this in the Carolinas?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
All three.
You know, I just... Go ahead.
All three times I was here in North Carolina at the time I saw it.
Well, it's a hotbed of activity down there, and I get a lot of reports from that area, including reports of crashes. Some very interesting
reports.
Well,
I don't know about that. I know, you know, it's...
They're kind of secret.
Kevin, yeah, right. It's just like Kevin said... You know what you see, and you just cannot deny it. If I had video cameras back in those days, and I could have filmed it, you know, I would think it would be proof.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't need proof for your own perceptions, you know, and I think that's a great insult to the people that I see on TV. A person will come forth, like yourself, a gentleman will come forth with his testimony, And they will attack your perceptions or your mental states, and I think that's a disservice to the person and to just real science itself, you know? As they say,
yeah,
it takes two people to convict a person of murder, you know? And they'll accept testimony. But on this subject, it seems like the rules of evidence are different and the rules of the interpretation of witness testimony are changed.
Well, yeah, but you know, that's only because we let them get away with that.
Agreed. We're afraid to stand up for our own.
I have had them try it on this show, and when I throw the same level of logic back at their disbelief, it hits them square between the eyes, knocks them to their knees, and they hang up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, just to finish off, I introduced this subject. It was reported to me by a contact in North Carolina that a battle between UFOs was seen, and that two of them, there were three objects involved, and two of them crashed, and one of them was an alien craft, and one of them was our secret defense craft that are engaging them in aerial battles. And there's also, remember that famous UFO crash that Dick Criswell brought to our attention that was covered in the UFO Hunters.
Yeah.
The Indiana Pearl.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, Tony. Very interesting. Thank you very much for calling.
623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. All right, let's see what we've got.
Can I go back? We haven't got a caller right now, but
yeah, we do. We've got a caller on hold, but you can do it.
Australia.
Uh-huh.
He mentioned, he's a very courageous fellow. He just brought us something. We always hear about abductions, and we almost always hear about the women. Right. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do we hear about the men, but it is so prevalent. And this man has just revealed to us being abducted by extraterrestrials and they're taking sperm samples from him. And this is a subject that I've only seen discussed in John Mack's documentary, and once on the History Channel when they interviewed Will Buick of the Mack Institute.
Yeah.
This happens to both men and to women, and they are definitely interested in our sexual components, for whatever reason, DNA research, engineering, hybridization. And I understand that, let's just skip it there, but I commend this gentleman for bringing that information forth. And men should not be afraid about admitting their contact with extraterrestrials. And there is a very strong sexual component to this phenomenon, this seduction.
Yeah. All right, to the telephone and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. Good evening, Robert. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
First of all, I've got to say that I do not believe in doorknobs, although I do believe in screen door latch hooks.
Okay. That's good.
You have to keep them out? That doesn't work.
As long as they don't use a knife and cut the screen, I'm good.
Yeah, well, you know. But that brings up, I know you said that as humor, but it brings up a good point. If someone tells me, I don't think there are UFOs, okay. I don't care. I just don't care. And if they say, well, I think there are UFOs, and they're from Guadalmodel, and all the Guadalmodels are coming here to they're going to capture all our cabbage. Okay. I mean, if that's what somebody chooses to believe, they've chosen to believe it, and I simply don't care.
Right.
I know what I have seen. And I know what other people have seen. I know what the preponderance of the evidence is. And, if somebody says, well, I just don't believe. Well, am I supposed to care whether they believe? I don't care.
Exactly. You know, there's a new paradigm now going on here, and Hawkins, Stephen Hawkins, coming up and saying, like you said earlier, oh, if there are aliens, you know, they're not. We don't want them here. We don't. They're bad for us. But there's under this new paradigm. Now everybody's going to be saying they're coming, but now there's also the new destruction that's coming. Just about the time we learn about the aliens, here comes Planet X. Here comes something else. You know, we can't learn about these aliens supposedly and everything be peaceful for 1,000 years. It's got to be right on the eve of destruction.
Well, again, though, whatever is real is going to be real regardless of what we get told. And,
right.
You know, it doesn't matter if they tell us that all aliens are blue. If they really are not, then they really are not, and it won't matter what we get told. I think people who tell us that all aliens are peaceful, I don't think they're accurate.
They're naive.
And people who tell us that all aliens are hostile, I don't think that's accurate. Are people on Earth hostile? Some are. Really hostile. Are people on Earth peaceful? Well, some are. Very peaceful. And I think we're going to discover about alien civilization that they have greatly advanced technology, but are really not all that different from us. You know something? We're not much different as a race of people now that we have all kinds of super high-tech weaponry. We're not much different than we were back when the cavalry was facing Indians that had bows and arrows. We're still pretty much the same people. Our technology has changed. Our toys have changed. But we're not a whole lot different. We're still as greedy as we ever were. We're still as warlike as we ever were. Not more so and not less.
And in comparison with the alien presence, we're the guys with the bows and arrows.
Yeah, you know, if we even have that.
And I'm going to get off of here.
All right.
If we go by just the biblical text, which a lot of people are using, you know, to warn us about the coming, the coming events, only one third of the angels were cast out. The other two third are still in service.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, of course, presupposes as well that there have been no other angels created to fill in for the one-third that got thrown out.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Oops. Yeah. Mike, are you still there, Mike?
On the subject he brought up, I just wanted to say we've touched on it a couple of times obliquely, but I believe that the New World Orderlies have hijacked world religions to stage this global theater. And some of the scenery that we see being set up right now is the Battle of Gog and Magog, which is really the Russians, Chechens, Transcaucasus area, to stage, you know, this final battle of Armageddon, and to force true religious prophecy. We have to be very careful about that, the stage management of history. Because it can just gets out of control, you know. They're not such great stage managers. But I do see that trend happening on both sides, as I said. You know, the world orderlies hijacking Christianity and, the end times scenario there, as well as Muslim fundamentalists hijacking Islam to force true their end time scenario of the return of the Mahdi.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Stefan from Quebec City.
Hello, Stefan.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great. In regards to Stephen Hawking, I guess my own opinion is that I'm actually quite glad. I was a little bit annoyed at what he said. You know, I found it kind of short-sighted, but I am glad in the sense that at least he's considering the possibility that aliens and extraterrestrials exist. And I think that his next step will be to say that they might not be overly hostile after all. At least not most of them are, you know, a percentage of them. And that he might actually embrace the possibility of contact in the future.
Well, I agree. He may be just the most current spokesperson for establishment science. I wasn't upset by his statement in any way. I was just puzzled.
All right, we have to step away for our break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, the final segment of this show and of this mini-series, Kick Some More Ass. And I hope that our discussion of the death spasms of the old paradigm are helping you to kick some more ass, some confusion, helping you to come out of the bog. I've got a flash message here from Kevin in Australia, and he says, "Hi, Kevin and Robert. It seems by media releases the powers that be are trying to control the agenda with fear-mongering. It's good to be wary of any type of contact if it occurs officially in 2010, but you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to aliens, to the aliens debate." And then he's got a question for you, Robert. He says, "What's your thought on the Clay and Sean Pickering story regarding SCA, Source A?"
Source A. Well, I know Source A very well personally. I've known him for 2 years. I trust him implicitly. He's an honorable officer of the U.S. military with a long, outstanding career, dedication. I've spoken to him many, many, many times, many hours together, and he is a man who is dedicated to defending the United States Constitution according to his oath, and he is doing everything in his power to see that constitutional rights are preserved, as any loyal officer of the United States military will do. He's revealed to me a lot of the things that he's experienced. He's had briefings that in which ET was present. It's not a gray. The ETs that are in contact through this UN initiative that are giving the directive, given the name the conformers, for lack of a better word, they are not, I would not call them humanoid from his description of them. They're more energetic intelligences. But they work in concert with others, extraterrestrials that are here. Let us just say they're guarding their interests. Many extraterrestrial races have common interests on planet Earth, and it seems to me common sense to believe that the so-called reptilian aliens have an interest in the reptile world, and that insectoid aliens have an interest in the well-being of the insect world and so on. And then there are the parasites, like the greys, who seem to be exploiting mankind, our resources, our DNA, our genetic material, for their own more occult purposes. But there are benevolent... I don't think we would be here if we weren't protected. That's basically it.
Okay, but the specifically Source A is rock solid.
Exactly, rock solid, and he's told me many things, and in time we will be giving them to the public. It has to be a slow process, and it's going well, and our motto is simply onward. Let's go on to the next stage.
All right, and we move onward to our last telephone call of the evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, my name's John.
Hi, John.
I'm calling from Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Robert.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. You too. I've been enjoying the show tonight, and it's a pleasure to make it through and to be on with yourself and Kevin. Cliff High was just on the Veritas show Friday, and I think it was the best interview that he put up there with Mel. And it seems like his his consciousness is expanding and awakening with each listen. I think maybe the Webbot and the ELTA report is contributing to that. His prognosis sounding very good. Robert, I just wanted to get your take on his spin on powers that be, so-called powers that be, appear to be leaving, and they're becoming irrelevant. And the effects of this grip that we've been talking about tonight are wearing off, and the closer we get to 2012, or in the next several months, we're going to start seeing, feeling an awakening consciousness.
Okay, John, we have to give him time to respond because we're almost out of show here.
I think Kevin addressed this earlier by referring to their irrelevance. That, and I believe that maybe we are going through a second war of independence, and this war of independence is declaring the independence of our minds and consciousnesses as individuals and reclaiming them. And basically, I think ignoring them is the best policy. Integrate yourself, ignore them. The disinformation is the liars, the corruption in the government. Get yourself together, make sure your own navigation is correct, and we're all going to do all right, because they are becoming irrelevant. And the less attention we pay to them and more attention we pay to ourselves and our well-being and our adaptability, the healthier and happier we're all going to be.
All right, John, I want to thank you for the call. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but thank you for the call. Well, if I can push the correct button, we'll be in good shape there. Okay, irrelevance. Well, one of the things that I say all the time is that powerful people are only as powerful as the rest of us let them be. And we have many examples where a people have decided that the power over them was simply irrelevant. The Declaration of Independence. Well, what was that? That was the pink slip for the king. They fired him. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. They fired the king. And they listed the reasons why. That's the Declaration of Independence. In a less civil way, yet just as effective, the people of Italy fired Mussolini. And they executed him. The same thing happened to Ceausescu. The same thing, in a little different way, happened to Milosevic. And powers that be, well, they aren't powers. They are mainly pompous. And so long as you fear them, they have power. And when people don't fear them and simply consider them irrelevant, they have no power. And so all their power resides in our response to their pontifications.
Yep.
And if our response is, you don't matter, then they have no power. Now, it takes, when you have one of these pompous people in a place of, for instance, in the federal government, or in any government, actually, they can, you know, if it's just you saying that they're irrelevant, they can target you. But when there's enough people that stand up and say no, then, you know, at that point, these people have no power. Let's talk about, and we only have a couple of seconds, just think what would happen if all of Wall Street and every bank in the country got together and told the federal regulators, no. No. Do you think that there's any power on earth that could make all that economy knuckle under if they all said no?
I think the best, no one said it better than Thomas Jefferson, that...
Got to make it quick. We got 4 seconds.
The people fear the government, there is tyranny. And when the government fears the people, there is liberty.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for this evening. Robert, thank you for being with us. Stay on the line with me for a moment. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow night. So long, everybody.